Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. The Zetas have described the time after death as complicated, as in many cases, such as coma states, the soul leaves the body well before physical death. And letting go of a past incarnation is not a simple matter, as often there are many unsettled matters. And I quote from Zeta Talk, When We Die, written April 1996. Humans are aware of a reception line awaiting them when they die, from the reports of near-death experiences, a long tunnel with a bright light at the end, and those now deceased, who were close to them, waiting or beckoning. If the moment of death is confusing to doctors, it's no less clear in the spiritual realm. An injured body, such as one sustaining massive brain injury, may cease to be a home for the incarnating soul months before those attending the death watch finally pull the sheets up over the lingering beloved. It is possible in such a circumstance that the soul has already been placed in another thriving human body, a newborn babe. On the other hand, some entities hang around long after the body has been cremated or burned as haunting ghosts. Beyond the issue of when the spirit leaves the body is the spiritual issue of how the soul puts the past life to rest, judges progress made on various lessons that were at the fore going into the incarnation, and determines any future course of action they personally might desire as a result. Critique time. If the death was sudden and unexpected, the soul may have many outstanding issues they remain concerned with after the physical body dies. This invariably is the first stop after death, though it varies depending on the general orientation of the soul and their life circumstances. Someone elderly, who had long settled their affairs in preparation for the inevitable, might not do more than cast a backward glance on their way to the future, noting that their death was being handled as they had anticipated. Someone in their prime, with dependent children or oldsters and many outstanding promises, might linger at this stage, visiting those they are concerned about as a ghost, essentially an out-of-body, for days or months until they can see the outcome. This stage differs between orientations, the service to others lingering longer due to their concern for others, and the service to self wishing only to move on to future opportunities. At times, those who have been wronged and wish for vindication or revenge may also linger at this stage, haunting, in an effort to influence human affairs. If the spirit is lingering, it is often allowed to do so, else it avoids the current incarnation and is distracted. As we have stated, the spirit, once sparked, does not die, and pain must be dealt with as a resolution on future lives. Spirits are aware of their past lives, though the human incarnated is clueless often. Thus, for the spirit, there is no change in this matter after death. The spirit between incarnations is like an out-of-body experience, in that it can communicate more readily, and thus the guides have no problem getting them to gather. They are talking up a storm, especially if coming from a recent disaster or shared experience. Once reincarnated, the young spirits are intent on learning experiences, pressing agendas forward and the like. Incarnations are more than discussion groups. They are action-oriented. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Critique time. This, for the Zetas, is a discussion on the lessons learned and takes place between the young soul and its spirit guides. Remember that movie, Groundhog Day, where a self-focused newscaster had to repeat a day in his life until he got it right? When he realized he could not die and would wake up the next morning in the same bed, repeating the same day, he progressed from selfish acts like pigging out on a dinner and seducing women with lies to helping others. This gave him more satisfaction and eventually earned him the right to move on with his life. This movie is unquestionably about the lessons to be learned during reincarnation. As the Zetas stated that most often the lesson is not learned and the soul must repeat in a life that will offer opportunities for the lesson to be learned. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Next Incarnation, written February 2002. Critique of the incarnation, judging the success or failure of the incarnation, is not always what the soul might desire. The soul might feel they themselves have made progress, where the spirit guides have another opinion entirely. Progress on lessons to be learned can be confused by cross currents, where the life circumstances offered opportunities such that unplanned lessons were addressed and those planned got neglected. The immature soul may view the incarnation as a failure in this regard and be surprised to find the record being looked at from unexpected angles. Most often the soul has made scarce progress and will find themselves repeating the setting in future lives until progress is made. The stage where future action is determined marks the point where the past life is settled and the future is beginning. This point is not reached as long as issues from the first two stages are outstanding. It is at this stage that the lessons at the fore of the next incarnation are clear. The immature soul may not be in agreement, and thus this stage can be drawn out, as the incarnation would be wasted if the focus were not clear. Where humans are aware of their past lives, and per the rule of forgetfulness, are supposed to start the incarnation with a clean slate, in fact, the immature soul needs to be clear on how the progress is viewed by others. They may not agree, but they must understand. At this point, the next incarnation is planned and plotted by the spirit guides, who give scant consideration to what the immature soul might be clamoring for. The spirit is often mulling the past life over prior to the moment of death and planning the next incarnation. Thus, there is a normal progression to discussion with the spirit guides, who are in teamship with the birthing guides, and the next incarnation is often arranged quickly. As we have mentioned, this is not the choice of the young spirit, but of the guides. Thus, it's a bit like getting a train at the station and walking over to our next train. Just like that, on your way again. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Zetas have stated that approximately 1,000 lifetimes are required for a young, newborn soul to learn its first lesson, to determine whether to be service to other, caring, or service to self, self-focused. This may not seem like a lesson, but recall that all the spiritual lessons are taught by trial and error, upon the initiative of the spirit, action-based rather than intellectual. The young soul is learning by experiences how they want to function vis-a-vis others. Thus, this is the first lesson on our first spiritual schoolhouse. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Many Incarnations, written January 2003. Humans tend to underestimate the number of incarnations they will have before advancing to light form, the stage where the body no longer is a learning tool. They explore their past lives, digging about with a past life regression therapist, and remember only those that are pleasant or put their actions in a good light. The horrific times, or times when they behaved so badly they prefer not to dwell on the matter, are not brought forward. The soul, of course, does not forget, but the human consciousness, hearing these tales, discards them and will only allow the pleasant to come through. Incarnations run into the thousands in the main before a graduation is achieved. Nancy is an example of someone who quickly made her orientation decision, having done so in a little more than 1,200 lifetimes, but there are others who require 50,000 or more incarnations to firmly decide. Even then, entities may vacillate and need to return to reestablish this decision. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. 50,000 lifetimes to decide. Per the Zetas, the spiritual orientation decision is not a lean to the right or the left. It's a dither most of the time. And even when the lean to the right or the left occurs, progress in any one direction is slow, and reversals can occur. So it takes time to reach the point where one is thinking of themselves 95% of the time, the service to self criteria, or thinking of themselves only 50% of the time, the service to other criteria. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Survival of the Fittest, written October 1996. Polarization of the orientations occurs even in cultures where the life support systems are ample, so that all living members of the intelligent species survive. Polarization of the orientations occurs due to myriad decisions the soul makes that build upon each other until the trend is undeniable. For those leaning toward the service to self, each self-focused decision requires that they harden themselves against others and focus on what they consider the rewards for having done so. This tends to harden them increasingly as these decisions are made until cruelty becomes a power trip, all sense of empathy having been lost. For those leaning toward service to others, each rescue of another is rewarded by the comfort and joy that another experiences. This is likewise experienced vicariously. Sacrifice is weighed in this light so that as empathy and the ability to experience comfort vicariously increases, the sacrifice diminishes in proportion. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The Earth is scheduled to become a home for those in the service to other in the near future, during and after the pole shift. This is not a specific date, as those living today will be allowed to live out their lifetimes, while new incarnations will in the main go only to those souls who are strongly service to other. Thus, over time, 100 years or so, a spiritual transformation will have occurred. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Transformation, written July 1995. What is the transformation? The Earth is undergoing a subtle transformation, as the transformation is now. This transformation has been progressing for at least this century and will go on for at least a century more. Transformations occur for many reasons. One reason is administrative, and this is why the Earth is undergoing its transformation now. The majority of those on Earth have not yet reached their orientation decision, but will be moved to another planet as the Earth has been designated as a future home for service to other oriented entities. The coming pole shift will expedite this process simply by the fact that 90% of the populace will die, either during the shift or shortly thereafter. To qualify for service to other orientation, a soul must consider others as often as the self. To qualify for service to self, the soul must focus on the self 95% of the time, almost exclusively. This decision, or the lesson of third density as it is called, needs to precede almost all other lessons, as mixing the two spiritual orientations together creates chaos, and thus other lessons cannot proceed. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The coming pole shift is expected to result in a 90% die-off of the current Earth's population. That's a lot of souls looking to reincarnate. But due to the sudden population explosion, which moved from about a billion souls on Earth to a current population of 6.5 billion, all in 100 years or so, Most of the humans on Earth are not housing reincarnated souls, but in a situation like the early caveman, providing the possibility for a soul to spark. And mostly, they don't. Most opportunities do not spark a soul, and thus there is not a soul to collect upon death, nor a reincarnation to arrange. I quote from Zeta Talk, Harvest, written July 1995. On your planet Earth, because of the geological changes that periodically happen, the transformation to fourth density has been planned to coincide with those geological changes. The reason is simple, though some may view it a horror. During the coming geological changes, the vast majority of your Earth's populace will perish suddenly. Those who survive will find a world without food or shelter from the elements. Medical treatment will be scarce, and hygiene the least of anyone's thoughts. Consequently, even after the cataclysms, the die-off will be huge. Reincarnation will not be affected by the pole shift any more than normal life cycles. Humans died young in the past. In the days of the caveman, life was shorter, so this is common to your species. There will be much death, and this has horrified many people, but at the present time, the majority of humans on Earth, in fact, four-fifths or more, do not have reincarnated souls, but can spark new souls. This has happened because of the population explosion. Reincarnation on new worlds does not happen because of every intelligent life that harbors the possibility of this. We call these aborted souls. This is not any decision on the part of an administrative force. It just simply happens. Nothing sparked a soul. Nothing sparks a soul in a parakeet or a dog. If there is an indolent life, or one without challenge, frequently the soul dissipates upon death rather than remaining to reincarnate and grow and increase in mass. Therefore, the pole shift will result in quite a number of souls suddenly looking for reincarnation. But because this is a transformation time, they will be gathered if they have not made their orientation decision to be service to self or service to other, and whisked off to a water planet to be reincarnated into a type of octopus and carry on their lesson. Those who are strongly service to other will reincarnate into more intelligent hominoids on Earth, and those who are service to self and have firmly decided this will be sent off to various worlds, at times in human form, for what we would term a very unpleasant life among others of their own kind. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The majority of reincarnating souls on Earth are in the spiritually undecided category, neither service to other, and thus qualifying to reincarnate into Zeta human hybrids on Earth, nor service to self to the extent that they will be removed to the prison planets that await them. The undecideds will be taken to a water planet to become a type of octopi. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Next Stop, written July 1997. What will this new world be like? It's a water world with scarcely a rock or two jutting above the surface of the endless waves. The species on this planet have evolved from life forms that spent their entire life in the water. Spiritual growth or spiritual interaction does not require the trappings of modern civilization, electricity, long-distance communication, and dentures. Spiritual growth was ongoing during the days of cavemen, and proceeds today in third world countries where life is scarcely better. For spiritual growth, what is needed is for the incarnated creature to be able to interact with each other, to enable another's life, improve it out of caring, or conversely to punish, intimidate, or starve another out of concern only for the self. Guns and knives and the oppression of debt are not needed to enable or express a service to self orientation. In a water world, snatching food from those weaker, blocking the way so that escape from a threatening situation is delayed, are all tools by which the selfish can demonstrate, by their actions, their chosen orientation. Likewise, opportunities to care for one another are available to every species. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. I presume nukes are not possible there, thank goodness. At least there's that to look forward to, and presumably no pole shifts either. What can those solidly in the service itself expect in their next lifetime? Nothing nearly as pleasant, that's for sure. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Service to Self, written July 1995. When we refer to there being lots of rules in the fourth density service to self, this is due to the nature of the service to self orientation. Self-focused entities want only to do what will be of service to themselves. How does their society run, then, if no one wants to grow food, for instance, and all want to steal food from the others? Unless there are strict rules, food does not get grown and processed. Thus, those at the top of the heap, who have won out in the pecking order contests, give the orders, make the rules, and viciously enforce them. It is only when such a situation exists that the service to self-oriented groups do anything except squabble. Where those in the service to self consider control of others of prime importance, they do not control other souls, but attempt to create an environment of threats and enticements such that this is the outcome. They are perforce required to live with others, and once the pecking order is established, go about the business of learning lessons in this manner. Those at the top of the pile have the best lifestyle, not unlike human society. Those at the bottom do the grunt work and live in the worst circumstances. Riots or revolts are unheard of, quickly settled during what we have called leveling wars between service to self groups. Newcomers to a group go through a quick process to determine pecking order, often injured horribly if they are slow learners. Thus, there is no ownership of the soul of others, only influencing behavior. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Leveling wars? The Zetas explain. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Leveling Wars, written May 1996. In these wars, the soldiers are not motivated out of loyalty or a commitment to ideals. They're all like gladiators, kill or be killed. A soldier who refuses to be the perfect killing machine for his master is made an example, and a quick and painless death is out of the question. Human wars see the use of biological weapons as nerve gas, nuclear bombs, maiming devices such as mines, psychological weapons such as reminders of home and comfort, and various wearing techniques such as starvation. Intergalactic wars between service-to-self groups are more brutal and direct, with complete destruction at the wink of an eye, the goal. The service-to-self groups, when establishing their pecking order, frequently brutalize and decimate each other, just as establishing the pecking order within a service-to-self group results in brutality and maiming, if not death. The pecking order is thus established and maintained with the same heavy-handed methods, so that a visitor to the service-to-self camp would think it remarkably peaceful, not seeing what came before. Service-to-self ranks are rebuilt from the orphanages where all their youngsters are raised, procreation temporarily stepped up until the count of physical bodies approximates the fourth density service-to-self entities incarnating within the group. All is peaceful again until some factor or another changes the power structure. All this is viewed from afar by service-to-other groups who are aware of the battles, but as they cannot be effective, essentially disinterested. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Meanwhile, the hybrid program, babies to receive the souls of those in the service to other orientation here on Earth when they die during the pole shift, has picked up the pace. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Stepping Up the Pace, written July 1995. After the cataclysms, the majority of the service to other humans due to remain on Earth will require new housing, so to speak, and our task has been to provide sufficient infant hybrids at that point in time. We are rushing at this time to meet that goal. Therefore, the number of hybrids are numerous. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The near-death experience of going down a tunnel toward a light, seeing familiar friends or family members waiting and greeting, is so common as to be taken as truth. What's going on here? Is this only the first step in many between lives, between one incarnation and another? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Near-Death Experience, written July 1995. Near-death experiences are quite common and are similar to out-of-body experiences, but with a twist. Where the soul has left the physical body, seeing the trend, it moves forward on its journey to return to the birthing envoys in preparation for the next incarnation. This process is complicated and has many steps. The first step is to let go of the former incarnation. As every dying person has many issues left undone, many statements left unsaid, and many concerns not yet completed to the soul's satisfaction, their focus is torn between the life they are leaving and the future. The birthing envoys meet this head-on by presenting the newly disincarnate soul with those involved in the leftover concerns. Thus, in a near-death experience, a soul may meet relatives and friends, both loved and hated, or co-workers involved in incompleted projects. When the pending death does not occur, the person remembers meeting familiar people, but not much else, as the death was aborted. Had the death continued, settling these leftover issues would have proceeded. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. If issues from the incarnation ending in death are not easily settled, the spirit may be allowed by the spirit guides to hang around, haunting, until the issues are settled and the spirit can proceed to the next incarnation without distraction. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Ghosts, written July 1995. All humans have visits from those they knew in the past, now dead. These spirits, who are primarily disincarnate, but can come from their next incarnation in an out-of-body, are trying to settle things they felt were left outstanding. These matters can be as simple as an apology they wish to express to you, or a bit of information they felt you needed, intended to be told to you when you next met. Death interrupts the plans. Ghosts are such disincarnate entities. Ghosts often show themselves to humans in a form the human remembers. This is not a willful act on the part of the ghost, but it's the way the human mind perceives the ghost, based on the fact that they understand they are communicating with someone they knew. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So does the dying human get to choose, get to dictate their next incarnation, get to refuse an incarnation they don't relish? How is it that incarnations occur in crippled bodies, damaged during the birthing process, into desperately poor families, into families where the father beats the children or the mother is neglectful, with genetics that give one bad teeth or a low IQ or a bad smell? I quote from Zeta Talk, Life Circumstances, written November 1995. What types of lifestyle or life circumstances or race or sex or physical appearance most leads one to either the service to self or service to other orientation? Incarnations are chosen by the birthing envoys based on the particular lesson or lessons the soul is most in need of learning, but the incarnation can bring unexpected influences to bear. One formerly leaning in the service to other orientation, finding themselves born into wealth and a beautiful body, may be lured by the ease with which they can make demands on others into considering the service to self orientation. On the other hand, this soul may take advantage of the avenues open to one born into wealth to do service to others on a major scale, and good looks only used as a door opener in this regard. The choice is up to the soul. One formerly leaning to the service to self, finding themselves born into the weaker sex and unattractive at that, may find themselves empathetic to their former victims and regretting their behavior in former lives. On the other hand, this soul more likely will choose to make themselves as unattractive as possible, taking a rebellious stance, and bully anyone in the vicinity weaker than they are as compensation. Again, the choice is up to the soul. Crises such as major disasters like earthquakes or hurricanes offer opportunities for action that help with a spiritual orientation decision. As you say, actions speak louder than words, meaning that words can lie, but the actions a person takes demonstrates their true intentions. In a major disaster, choices must be made, as bleeding bodies and the screams of agony are everywhere. When one turns away from the bewildered, bleeding toddler and takes oneself to comfort and safety, one has made a clear choice. But life offers these kinds of choices every day in less dramatic ways, and the circumstances one is born into make little difference. Take the choice of a wealthy young man who must make a choice between taking the job that will gain him the approval of his family and friends, or one that will allow him to make a difference in the world. He will lose some of his creature comforts in the form of family and friends, his security blanket. How much different is that from a poor man relying on his extended family, who risks alienating them if he emphasizes the big picture rather than the short-term financial gain? In both cases, the security blanket is being risked, and the loss is measured in relative terms. To one used to wealth, not being invited to join the yacht club is equivalent to not being included in a game of billiards, and having to downgrade one's standard of living by moving out of the big house and into a flat is equivalent to moving out of a crowded bedroom and using the back seat of the car for a bed. It's all relative, and the spiritual lessons proceed in spite of differences in life circumstances. In all cases, what is done with the incarnation is up to the soul. End of the quote from Zedatva. Apparently, it's the spirit guides who decide, at least early in the process, for young spirits. Maybe the more mature souls get to choose what they want to do later on, my guess. But for the young souls, for the Zetas, having tribulations actually helps the process of making a spiritual orientation decision. And a quote from Zedatov, Tribulations, written July 1995. Tribulations are important in helping a soul determine their spiritual orientation. Without tribulations, there would scarcely be any progress in this regard. Why would there be, as in times of comfort and plenty, when there is essentially no stress or competition, it's not difficult to get along? One can see this every day. Children at play, who all have the same toy, engage themselves in playing with the toy and ignoring the others. But give only one or a few the toy, and place the others in want, and a drama ensues. Some decide to enjoy the toy vicariously, reveling in the enjoyment the others are having. Some, consumed with envy, plot how to secure the toy for themselves. Some, having learned how to manipulate social situations, may wail and cry, seeking what they term justice. Where this is a simple example, one every adult can relate to and sees every day, most tribulations are born in silence and are hidden from view. This does not change the nature of the action, however. Serious tribulations, such as a debilitating disease, also have an effect on the spiritual growth, and not altogether a negative one either. The debilitation affects others too, such that they are moved to care for and empathize with the afflicted one. In the service to other orientation, there are two parties involved, the giver and the receiver. Learning how to receive is just as important, surprisingly, as learning how to give. When one is in service to others, they do not serve well if they simply give the others whatever is desired. What the other wants may not be in their best interests. Likewise, when one is in a position to receive, this can be done effectively in a matter-of-fact manner, or detrimentally, seeking an enslavement of some kind of the giver. Who has not seen a debilitated human dominate the household? Likewise, tribulations such as difficult job situations or an appearance that turns others off contributes to growth on all sides. Where a soul is growing toward the service to self-orientation, tribulations have the effect of speeding this process. The firm decision can, in fact, be made in an instant. Given a situation where the self would have to sacrifice to a small degree to help another in dire straits, or more particularly, where the other would have to be drastically sacrificed to improve the lot of the self to a slight degree, the tribulation can result in a decision to become service to self in a flash. It is simply clear to all concerned where the self stands, and is most particularly clear to the self. For the self to have made this decision, the orientation is clearly service to self. Should the reader feel that many times the soul may be vacillating and have serious regrets afterward, let us say that this in fact does not occur. Vacillations occur where a decision has not been made and a series of half-hearted actions in this direction and then in that ensue. Where a firm decision has been made, there are no regrets afterwards, only insight into what the future holds. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Remember, the criteria for service to other is that 50% of the time we think of ourselves and 50% of the time think of others. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Self-Doubts, written February 1997. In general, if a person wonders what orientation they have chosen, they've not yet chosen. Those who have chosen their orientation have almost daily clues that they've made a choice and that they are solidly in one camp or the other. For those in the service to other, they not only find themselves frequently musing about the welfare of others, they take steps to enhance the welfare of others. These steps are not a mere phone call inquiring about someone's health, but require the concerned one to go out of their way, spending precious time that would otherwise be spent on recreation or pleasure or bettering one's circumstances or spending personal resources such as savings or personal possessions. These steps are not done as a result of a resolve to become a service to other person. They're done automatically. If one needs reminders to take these steps, then they are trying to become an individual operating in the service to other, and they have not yet arrived. For those in the service to self, the focus on the self is never ending. It's a rare and fleeting moment that this individual ponders another's circumstances, most likely because the other's circumstances remind the individual, solidly in the service to self, of his own past. At these times, the individual will quickly correct themselves, getting back to the business at hand, self-interest. Where the person firmly in the service to other orientation will, of course, have occasional preoccupation with self, and even give the self priority at times, the person firmly in the service to self continually takes this posture. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So with the anticipated death rate of 90% after the pole shift and the options available for our next incarnation, how to improve our odds of being in the service to other batch that reincarnates into high-tech communities on the Earth of the future? Unfortunately, this is not an intellectual decision, and there are no shortcuts. I quote from Zeta Talk, Shortcuts, written March 1996. Faced with a human dilemma, that they are stuck in a world fraught with problems that their limited intelligence seems incapable of resolving, that they are thrown in with the mean-spirited and avaricious, that they have tenuous physical security at best on a world that can visit violent weather and geological changes upon them, humans look for shortcuts. They have caught the gist of spiritual evolution. Learn these lessons and you can progress to a world where you will have greater capabilities, more intellect, can control your environment so that your lessons can progress, are separated from the mean-spirited and can escape into another dimension when things get rough. Is there not a shortcut, some fast track to the promised land, a way to compress these lessons so that one could complete them, say, today? This is akin to the youngster seeing his older siblings driving off in the family car or taking a trip without an escort, wanting the same privileges. What parent would give in just to relieve the youngster's frustrations? Would not the youngster feel better but for a moment and then drowned in troubles? The spiritual lesson, that of choosing one's spiritual orientation, is not the simple decision that humans assume. Individual choices during a lifetime can be made quickly and simply, but the overall orientation is one that grows slowly and is compounded by millions of choices over thousands of lifetimes. A single choice does not suffice, although when the soul is close to completing its determination, this may weigh in so that the choice has been completed. Likewise, this is not an intellectual decision, but one based on the actions taken. A mother, loving her children almost more than herself, may find she can sacrifice for their betterment without regret, but when faced with a stranger in need, hesitates. A husband, feeling protective of his wife to the point of placing himself in harm's way in order to shield her, finds himself looking the other way when a stranger on the street is under attack. A neighbor, watching another struggling to clear brush, may rush out to assist and enjoy the sense of bonding and camaraderie that ensues, but when away from home, isolates himself from similar opportunities because payback is unlikely to come from a stranger. A human may think themselves to have made the determination to be service to others, but the many tests in the arena of life prove otherwise. Since the lessons of higher densities cannot progress without a separation of the orientations, those who have not yet decided must stick to their lesson until it is completed. No shortcuts allowed. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. For those wanting a clear-cut guide for a service to other behavior, the Golden Rule is the best. And I quote from Zeta Talk on the Golden Rule, written September 2004. To those intellectually examining the definition on spiritual orientation and the rule that moving into one or the other camp requires many lifetimes of trial and error to grasp what living in that orientation means, the matter is anything but clear. We've stated that those in the service to other orientation are thinking of others at least as often as they're thinking of themselves, 50%, and that those in the service to self manage a fleeting thought about others only 5% of the time. Well, what times are those? If a banker considers the starving in his community, giving a percentage of his profits directly to food purchases for them, a charity, does this have the same weight as if this banker gave the percentage of his profits to small businesses in order to hire the unemployed, thus reducing starvation perhaps for less, but for a longer time? One must examine his motives. The first move would seem to be purely humanitarian, yet if his motive is to increase business at his bank by getting publicity for his move, the motive is selfish, service to self. The second move would seem to be shrewd, to increase business activity in the community from which he might profit. But if his motive is truly to reduce starvation and despair in his community in the most effective way possible, the best use of his dollar, then this move is driven by service to other motives. From an intellectual standpoint, it's a quagmire. In the simple words of Jesus, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Jesus, Muhammad, and Buddha, star children all, who came to leave a gift of clarity for mankind, all preached the same message. Equality, where the least of you is considered on the same level as the self. Considering one's physical needs for food and shelter in a manner that balances concern for what others need, what the goat about to be slaughtered might feel, what the land overgrazed or tilled into a dust bowl might need. Confusing, a quagmire of intellectual decisions, if left to the intellect alone. What these great preachers left with mankind was the suggestion that the answer lies in the heart. Before you do something that will affect another, put yourself in that other's place and imagine the consequences of your action. This is generally known as the Golden Rule. Do unto others. Driven by the heart, one will never make an errant decision from a spiritual standpoint. A man in agony over whether to share the meat from his last goat with his starving neighbors, when his own family is faint from hunger most of the time, will find his answer by placing himself in their perspective, as well as his family's perspective. What sense of abandonment will his neighbors have, seeing his family feast when they are cramped and weak? What need to throw up walls against empathy for the neighbors will his family require in order to choke down the meal quickly, blinded to the neighbor's plight? He chooses sharing, seeing that damage to the soul is the greater danger, as the physical will in any case pass. The reason that an average of 1,000 lifetimes is required for a young soul to reach its orientation decision is this complexity. As the man about to share his last goat with his neighbors, each a bite and none a full meal, knows from experience what the alternatives are. He has experienced abandonment, has forced himself to block empathy at some time in his past lives, and has experienced hunger to the point of starving to death, and thus can arrive at his decision. He has become, rather than a young soul, an old soul and wise. The earth currently has a large number of very young souls due to the population explosion, most so immature as to be considered infants. If an old and wise soul is to be considered aged, how does one explain to an infant that the others in the playpen must be considered? Where infants are also considered to be focused solely on themselves, they in fact respond to other infants put in the playpen, smiling at each other and vicariously enjoying the play of the other. Body language, the vibes that all living creatures exude and which can be read by another, are there. Thus even infants can practice the golden rule, even on a first lifetime, and this is the lifetime to be used going into any event when sudden change and turmoil will ensue. This is our best advice. In that many souls who have known each other for perhaps hundreds of incarnations, perhaps as husband and wife, or in the same communities or family settings, may have to separate after this, the last incarnation, there is often goodbyes from the newly dead. And I quote from Zeta Talk, The Dead, written December 1995. Increasingly, during the awakening, humans will experience contacts with souls formerly incarnated as their family or friends, with the dead. Where visions of dead relatives or friends have been intrinsic during a new-death experience, or within minutes of the death of a loved one who would appear briefly to say goodbye, these visions will begin to occur out of these contexts. These visions, a result of a spirit-to-spirit communication, are recorded in the subconscious, and thus appear during recall in the conscious in a manner the human brain can grasp. These formerly incarnated souls in no way have their former form or garb, but are recorded in the brain in that manner due to mental conditions that are bonded to thoughts of the dead loved one. If the spirit formerly incarnated as Uncle Joe visits, then one frames this out as awareness of the visit with Uncle Joe's visage and tone of voice, just a brain cell away from where memories of Uncle Joe are stored. As the transformation is now, souls who have made the orientation decision and undecided souls alike want that last word with loved ones before moving on to their next incarnation. If firmly in the service to other, they may wish to encourage others in this direction. If undecided and aware that they will be taken to a world far from Earth, they may wish to say goodbye or express encouragement to loved ones they know will likewise be making the same trip. And if firmly in the service to self, they may wish to contact a former cohort and put in a word for this orientation choice so as to be less alone in a potentially distressing environment. Humans giving the call will thus find that increasingly they are communicating not only with aliens, but with the dead. This increase is not due to any change in council rules or in procedures in the alien groups visiting Earth, but is due to the awareness that the dead have of the transformation, which is now. In the past, the dead expected their next incarnation to follow past patterns. Now they know otherwise. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Likewise, sensing the coming times is very troubled, living hard, many who are not in good health or fear being a burden on loved ones are taking themselves into locales where they will be taken out by the pole shift, expressing a death wish. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Death Wish, written November 1995. Florida and California are both at risk to heavy tidal waves during the coming pole shift, and as suffocation is a painless and swift departure, many oldsters or transients, wishing not to linger during troubled times, have migrated there. These decisions are not conscious, however, and if challenged, would be denied. Suicide, for those in good health who have concern for others, should never be considered, although this is, of course, a personal decision. The reason we advise to consider otherwise is that others will need you. You are aware of what is coming, and so many will be taken unawares. There are children who would be left orphaned, without protection, vulnerable to the worst nightmares. There are those who will wish to stay alive for the sake of their dependents, children, and others in poor health or needing them, who will need advice. What to eat? Where to go? How to distill the water to avoid lead poisoning? Where to get vitamin C? And what to expect over the next few months? Should they move to the hills or remain among the rivers where fish abound? Should they rebuild a shelter or plan a houseboat to accommodate the rising water? Should they join this group or that, or take to the road? What country or direction is the best direction if moving is the obvious choice? How long will this last? Will help arrive to rescue them? All these questions are those you can help them with. So before considering an easy way out for yourself, consider how much you can relieve the pain of others who will suffer without your help. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And the death rate will be huge. The Zetas have anticipated a 90% death rate, not so much due to the force of the shift, the drowning, and the cities crumbling about those trapped there, but because of depression and starvation and illness afterwards. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Death Rate, written January 2000. Many humans are alive today only because of modern crop growing techniques, where a very few large farms can feed many in the cities. It was not that way 100 years ago, nor was it the case that humans with genetic faults would live. If they got diabetes, for example, they died. Pneumonia took people out in a wink, and now it's cured with antibiotics. The earth will return to those times when there will be no antibiotics, where people who need special medication simply don't receive it, and they will die. This is not a horror. This is simply a return to life as it existed 100 years ago. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So you can see, for those on Earth who were born here, the pole shift will indeed be Judgment Day, a time when we will incarnate on a water world, be hauled off to the prison planets, or reincarnate back on Earth in hybrid communities. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.